think the only coach ever in Michigan to go 0-6 in 1 week. And it was because I was coaching varsity at the time, but our JV coach had a daughter. And there's some complications during the birth, nothing crazy, but he had to be out for the week to be with his family. So I coached the JV and the varsity that week, and we had like a game that was rescheduled because we got snowed out. So we had three games that week. So six games between JV and varsity, and we lost them all. Definitely learned from it.
Not many coaches have a winless season and get a promotion, but Anthony Trocheck got that opportunity, and he made the most of it. And that's a Duff Said.
Hey, Joe, why is a Duff Said your favorite podcast, man?
A Duff Said puts the respect on our name that we deserve.
Come on, everybody!
This is episode 20 of A Duff Said. I'm your host, Duff Tyler. Thank you so much for hitting the play button on this podcast. Now, when I started covering sports in Michigan 10 years ago, the number of schools that I covered was relatively low. When I first moved to Michigan, I lived in Marine City for a number of years, and so for the longest time, the only schools that I really dealt with were Marine City, St. Clair, Marysville. Sometimes I'd make a trip to Port Huron, or sometimes I would go to Algonac. But I never really made it out into the Thumb. For the longest time, I thought the Thumb was just this densely populated area where people did outdoor activities. I never knew much about the basketball culture that is in the Thumb until I got into my current role that I've held for about 5 years now. When I finally made it out to the Thumb and I got a chance to see what the basketball culture is like out there, I discovered that the teams and the schools in the Thumb are really good. There is some good basketball going on in the Thumb. Now, we're not necessarily talking superstars, but every Friday night in the Thumb, the gyms are packed and the action is always exciting. So when I created this podcast, I wanted to find a way to show as much love as I could to the Thumb, and that's why I invited this week's guest on board for episode 20. I am joined now by a man who is about to start year 6 as head coach of the Brown City Green Devils. Anthony Trocheck is my guest. Coach T, thank you so much for stopping in this week.
I'm honored to be on. I've listened to a couple of your podcasts and meeting you last year. I love what you do. Follow you on Twitter, and I'm just excited.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Now, I learned something about you recently that I found rather interesting. You and I both have something in common. We both like reading. Now, I've always enjoyed reading, and I like to read to people. It's one of the reasons why I got into broadcast journalism. Now, here's where you and I differ on reading. When I was in high school, I was always that guy. Whenever the teacher would call on somebody to read to the class, mine was the first hand up. I always took advantage of those opportunities because I would always read to the class in my newsman delivery, and whenever I'd read from the textbooks, I would try to be like Dan Rather or some of the other famous anchormen of that time. But you, on the other hand, you kind of shied away from that. That was not really your forte.
Oh, not in high school, no. I just, lacked confidence in my reading ability, and, which is surprising that I like to read so much now that I'm an avid reader. Basically, in high school, the teacher would ask for a volunteer. My go-to was I pretend like I was tying my shoes. So kind of ducked down under my desk so they wouldn't call on me just because I was afraid I'd mess up a word or mispronounce something. But not now, after becoming an avid reader, I really enjoy it. And I'd be just like you. My hand would be the first one up in the class.
What's one of the best books you've ever flipped the pages on?
Currently, Atomic Habits by James Clear. Just a great book about building habits and just kind of the science behind it. Are you familiar with that one?
I am not. What can you tell me about that?
It's just interesting about, it's all about building good habits. And for example, I'll use one of the examples. It's just changing your environment. So let's say you want to play less video games. Maybe it's a kid. And you just change the environment here. And so instead of just saying, I'm going to play less video games, you literally put your video game system in the closet. So you've changed that environment, meaning the next time you want to play, you have to take it out of the closet. You have to hook it up. You have to do all that stuff. So it's what environment you're in to create these habits. So definitely, it's a good, interesting read.
I find it interesting that you bring up the video games, because I understand in your earlier days, when you were first discovering your passion for basketball, your PlayStation kind of figured heavily into that.
Yeah, you know, as any kid, I loved to play basketball, and I grew up in a town, Williamson, Michigan, and it was 99-2000, their basketball team. I just kind of really fell in love with them. I also got to watch my cousins play. They played at the next town over, so I grew up in the gym. But that Williamson team, I literally, like, created them on my PlayStation. I had, you know, Jason Bauer, Jason Stubbs, Zeb Kenny, Travis Smith. These were guys I idolized, and I created them on NBA Live. It was like NBA Live 2000. And, yeah, so I did play some basketball video games growing up.
Your mom was somebody that also really opened up your eyes to basketball. She would take you and your brother to those games in Williamson to see your cousins play. What was it about them and watching them on the court that developed this passion that you had for basketball?
You know, I can't pinpoint one thing, but, you know, she was close with her family, and they were her nephews, and we'd all go support them at the Weberville games. And I had three cousins, and they played Nate, Seth, and Aaron Lott, and just, you know, we'd go and support them. And I don't know, something just sparked in me, and I fell in love with the game. Being in those gyms really helped.
How would you describe Anthony Trocheck, the basketball player? I'm sure your players would be curious to know about this.
I didn't shoot a lot. I'll tell you that. My role was more of a defensive player and to set up other guys, but I just wanted to be on the floor and do anything to help my team win. And, you know, we had a couple good offensive players the years that I was on varsity. So my role was to, you know, shut down the other team's best player. And I just wanted to play. I wanted to be on the floor. So if that was my role, I was going to do that. So that's how it described me, I guess.
You're about to begin year 6 as head coach at Brown City. And as we have this conversation, practice just got underway for you and your team. How good did it feel to get back out there on the court with your guys?
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah, we just finished our first practice, and just being in the gym with the guys, you know, being around them, realize how much, you know, I miss them. I mean, I see them all the time, but not in the basketball setting. And, you know, it's just something I love. Even before practice, I just had a smile on my face, and I couldn't sit still right before practice. My last hour of the day is my conference hour, and I basically just paced around and got stuff ready for practice because I was just ready to go.
Who was more excited, you or them?
I'd say some of them. I tried to, inside, if they could see inside, it might have been me, but some of them were pretty excited, and I got some guys that I'm excited to work with this year. They're going to be hard workers, and just looking forward to the opportunity to coach them.
You are looking to build on a team that went 9-10 a season ago. For the guys that you have coming back, what was their takeaway from last year, and what are some things that you see that they'll be able to improve upon?
Yeah, we have a young team. We return a couple seniors and a couple juniors that were up as sophomore, and then one player that was up as a freshman. And I think that the seniors last year did a good job of passing on the legacy of just, you know, coming to work every day with the blue collar work ethic and putting in the time. And we're not gonna out talent anybody. You know, we gotta outwork them. So I think that's one thing that the guys this year understand. And, you know, and hopefully they also understand that it's about getting better every day. You know, I felt last year in the season, we had a good start to the season, and then we kind of hit a plateau. It was probably because I didn't talk to you as much, because we were doing well when I was talking to you. But we got to push through that and just understand we're just here to get better every day.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to talk to you guys every week during the season, so I can only go where I'm sent. And if I had anything to do with how the second half of the season went, I apologize to you and Brown City.
Yeah, just don't go to any, like, league teams. If you could just, you know, Brown City, and that's about it for the GTC. I appreciate that.
Not a problem. I think we can work something out there. Now, I want to talk about Brown City now. And for those who may not be familiar with Brown City, your town is located just under the main mass of the Thumb in the state of Michigan. Now, there's a lot of people that don't know much about the basketball culture in the Thumb because, particularly at this time of year, These individuals tend to view the thumb as just this cold, dark, dreary, windy, wintry place to just stay away from. But for you guys who are involved in basketball, this is a very special time of year for you guys. How would you describe the basketball culture in the thumb?
You know, coming from the Lansing area, it was a little different, but it's a great culture. And, you know, Bronx City basketball has an amazing culture. Tony Burton is in a Hall of Fame coach that won over 400 games, and he's currently the AD, so he's somebody that I bounce ideas off of, and he's just great support. He still coaches with his wife, Cindy Burton. They do a great job with the girls program. And just what I've noticed about the thumb is how kind of tight-knit it is as far as the support, especially like USA basketball. Unionville Seabowing has had a couple runs these last couple of years, and they played Flint Beecher and knocked off Flint Beecher 2 years ago. And, I mean, majority of the people there that were cheering for him, a lot of the people there were not from USA. They were just supporting the thumb in through USA. So I'd say, you know, it's a great supportive area. But, yeah, definitely basketball, you know, there's some good quality programs. And some people might not know about them across the state because a lot of them are Class Cs. And if you're in the tournament, if you go west, you usually run into Flint Beecher, who's won like 8 of the last 9 regionals. And if you go south, you're going to run into Detroit Edison or one of those, a solid team out of Detroit. So it's tough to get out of that thumb. When you do it, it's special. And that's why USA's run was pretty amazing.
I was going to ask you about that later on, but let's dive into that right now, because in 2017, you guys had to take them on in the, I believe it was the state quarterfinals. And you guys lost that game, and then the Bucks go on to win a third straight state championship. But then the following year, like you said, they ran into USA, and I've had a couple of people from Unionville Seabowing on to talk specifically about that game, because that was probably one of the biggest upsets I have ever seen in my entire 20-plus years of sports journalism. What was it like just for you to watch that unfold and to see USA get one for the thumb?
I was definitely a huge USA fan that night, knowing how tough Flint Beecher and how talented they are. But, you know, knowing USA, their coach and their culture, like, it was an upset, but it wasn't completely surprising. They had a good group of kids that had a lot of grit and that were well prepared and knew that they had, if they wanted to do something special, they'd have to get through Flint Beecher. And, you know, Steve Kramer, who's a good friend of mine, grew up in USA. His younger brother was on the team. So, yeah, I was a huge fan that night. And one interesting thing that stuck out to me was Coach Gainforth for USA. He was so cool and calm for the most of the game on the bench. And it just showed his confidence in preparation and his confidence in the players. It was like they were coaching. And I think that's something that, you know, he should be proud of and something that I'd love to have someday.
Now, I've had Hunter Bone on this podcast to talk about that night. He was one of the players that helped guide the Patriots to that upset over Beecher. And I remember asking him, I said, were you guys at all intimidated by the fact that you had to face them? And he said, yeah, sure, there was an intimidation factor there. But he also told me that his mindset that night was, I was going into the game thinking, why should we lose? Other than the fact that they're Beecher, why should we not go into this game thinking we're going to win? And so when you see upsets like that one and another one that just happened last week when Evansville goes into Kentucky's house and knocks off the number one team in the country, how often do you use that as motivation for your guys when you guys are up against a much tougher opponent?
Well, yeah, definitely use it and definitely speak of that, especially the USA win over Flint Beach. It just shows it is possible with great preparation, great confidence and fundamentals. And, you know, to not be intimidated. And the game of basketball is, you know, it's an upset game. Sometimes the ball doesn't go in. Sometimes it does. You know, with Michigan not having a shot clock, you can kind of control tempo a little. And so, you know, upsets are possible, definitely. And it's something, you know, I try to share with my team that on any given night, we could win. Any given night, we could lose because of the game of basketball, how, you know, the underdog, you know, they're not that much of an underdog.
Speaking of your team, whenever someone new comes along, you make sure to learn everything you can about that kid. And there is something in particular that you do for all of your players, past and present. You always make sure to wish them a happy birthday. Now, you do this on social media, and you always have those dates circled on your calendar. When did you first start doing this?
I'm not sure where I first came from, but it's just something, you know, your birthday is a special day to you. It's not like Christmas. It's your day. I should share it with somebody, I guess. But, you know, that's one of the first things I do is I put my player's birthday in the calendar and I make sure I shoot them a text. And after they graduate, if they played all the years they graduated from Brown City, you know, playing varsity, I take a couple pictures of them, say something on social media, wish them a happy birthday, and usually send them a text and see how they're doing. It's just another way to stay in contact too with them, to hear how their life's going. But you know, that's just a way that I try to make connections with players.
You come from a town of about just over 1,300 people, so it's a close-knit community. Everybody knows everybody. How do they react to that?
A lot of them are just, you know, thankful, thanks, coach. And, you know, it's the least I could do for all the things they've done for me as a player. As sometimes it's the other coaches, it's just, you know, the least I could do to show my gratitude for all they've done.
When I was in college, I had a professor that used to always tell me, the least you can do is nothing at all. So the fact that you're taking just that little step, I'm sure that means a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of times, it's almost a reminder to myself to check in on, especially the former guys, the guys that have graduated. How's school going? You know, how your class is going? How's work going? So it's just a way to stay connected to them.
Now, you keep a list of all the guys' names on your team. You make sure that you've got those names memorized. But I was wondering if it goes a little bit further than that. Do you guys like to give yourselves nicknames? And do the guys have a nickname for you?
A lot of people will just call me Coach Trosh, or they just shorten my name. I was never huge on nicknames until recently because I feel like it is kind of special and is kind of fun as long as the kids enjoy the nickname. But yeah, I do keep track of, in my office, there's a list of their names and it says communication is key. And every time I talk to them, I write the date down to make sure I'm getting around to players and just checking in on them. A lot of times it might not even be about basketball. It's just about how classes are going, you know, how things are going with their family, just to get to know them. So that's kind of one of my favorite parts is just getting to know the kids on a different level. So even in summer basketball, we do some stuff with that. That's one of my favorite times to get to know kids because we usually get out of town and go to a team camp. So it's a lot of fun.
Now, since you're on the podcast, I actually took the time to create a nickname for you. Here goes. Coach T from the BC. What do you think?
Ooh, I like it. I've never, I don't know if anyone calls me Coach T, but I do like it. Coach T from BC, hey, that's a nice ring to it. It rolls off the tongue well.
Exactly. And to all your players who are listening on this, I want to get this trending on social media. So as soon as you hear this, guys, I want to see hashtag Coach T from the BC. Get on it, guys.
See, when I teach, I don't know if I like being called Mr. T. I kind of didn't like it at first because I was always feel like I would have to tell the kid, I pity the fool. But now like the kids are too young to know who Mr. T is, so I don't mind it if they call me Mr. T, but I don't even know if they know who that is.
That actually kind of makes me sad. But getting back to the kids on your team, there are some things that you like to do with them off of the court, and these include things like going to dinner or even taking a trip with them to Walmart. What were those experiences like, and what was it like for you to get to know your kids off the court?
I think that's just how we preach a lot about the brotherhood and building connections. And yeah, one thing we did during summer basketball that you kind of mentioned is we called it the character dinner. And me and my assistant, Dan Lutzenheiser, who's a great, great coach, we came up with different characters for the players to portray during dinner. So they had to stay full character during dinner. Then at the end, we voted who was best character. And some of the characters were like the little old lady. One was like the super positive person. It's always positive. One was the super negative person. Then we had the person that brags about everything. And then the one upper. So like everything that person was bragging about, they one upped it. And it was just a lot of fun to have them get in full character and just be goofy. And it was a good time with that. And then on that trip, we also went to Walmart and we had who could buy the strangest gift. Or the strangest item at Walmart was $5 and under. So that was kind of like a scavenger hunt type of activity. It's just, you know, getting away, doing silly things like that with the kids. Just, I feel it's helped build the relationships with them. And it also creates inside jokes that, you know, no one else gets but us.
Those are important to have, and I really want to know what the strange item was.
It was something that you like rub on your feet for calluses. What is it called? A pumice stone. Is it a pumice stone? Is that what it's called?
Maybe. I'm not really sure. I'm not really up to date with that. I don't need those things just yet, but I'm sure that day is coming.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I might have messed that up, but I forget what it was. It was definitely strange. It won, yeah.
Now, when it comes to your team and items, there is one particular item that you use as a competitive device, and that is the WWE Championship belt. As soon as I saw that, I was totally on board with it. How does one go about getting that, and how competitive is the competition for it?
It's really competitive. It's called our charge belt. And again, me and my assistant, but he kind of took ownership of it because he loved kids taking charges. It's one of the toughest plays in basketball to play. So we chart it. We keep track of it. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, he'll go into practice or go into the locker room, grab out the old school WWE, the winged belt, and he'll go hand it to a kid if he takes a charge. And then whoever takes the next charge, he's got to pass it on to that. And at the end of the season, we give it to the person that drew the most charges throughout the year. The kids love it. They're definitely willing to take charges.
That is my favorite championship belt in all of the WWE championship belts. So I give you mad props for coming up with that one.
Hands down, yeah. I know I've read some of the stuff. Oh, you're a big wrestling fan. I grew up, a pretty big wrestling fan myself.
Well, the first time I ever saw it, it was worn by Macho Man Randy Savage at a house show in my hometown. And from that moment on, I was hooked. And I always connected the WWE with that particular championship belt.
Yeah, it's definitely by far the best belt. Did you attend any WWF, back when it was WWF, events?
Oh, of course. I went to several back in those days. So I saw a number of legends, unfortunately guys that are no longer with us, but that night when I went to that show in May of 1988, that's when I became a lifelong fan of Bret the Hitman Hart.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days. What was your most memorable? Like, what was the favorite one that you saw live?
The favorite one I saw live had to be the night that I was standing right next to the railing and Andre the Giant walked past me. And I got to compare myself as a 10-year-old boy to Andre the Giant. And he pretty much towered over me. He cast a shadow.
Wow. That's incredible. I was fortunate enough to go to SummerSlam, I think it was 94, and Lex Luger slammed Yokozuna. And he rolled out of the ring. He got the 10 count, so I was pulling for Lex. He didn't end up getting the belt, but that was awesome. Just seeing the size of him was pretty incredible.
And that was at the Palace. And as we speak right now, I'm at my house in Lake Orion. I'm 10 minutes away from the Palace. And they just, for whatever reason, that was the only time they ever brought a massive pay-per-view to the Palace. And I was so disappointed by that because I felt like that would have been a great venue.
And I was young. I think I was 8 years old or something. But we had pretty good seats, and it was a good venue.
Now, as far as you, the basketball coach, getting back to that, you've obviously created this great rapport with your players. When did you decide that these were the kind of things that you wanted to do for your guys and be that kind of influence?
I just think, my why as far as coaching is just to kind of transform the lives of of kids and just want to make a positive influence on them because that's going to last longer than any, skill I teach them basketball-wise. And it just strengthens the bonds. I just want to help, help kids develop into good young men and young men of character. And so we're high on that and we do the best we can. Sometimes I fail. But I have great support from our AD and administration as far as in all those aspects.
As far as your coaching philosophy goes, it centers around trying to bring energy to the team and do something you like to call controlling the controllables.
It's something we work on every day. And like today, I had them at the beginning of practice list the characteristics of a Brown City basketball player, what they'd like other people to kind of describe. And they listed them on the board. And then I asked them, individually, is there anything on this board that's out of your control that you're not capable of doing? And everything on the board was like toughness, being family, you know, working hard. So, you know, we focus on the things that is under that are under our control, because, you know, it's just a waste of time to focus on stuff that's not under your control. And I think it's a frustrating thing to do. So the things that we can control are like our effort, our attitude, if we're focused, and then, you know, how good of a teammate we are. We can control those things. You can control your effort and attitude no matter the circumstances. So if something else happens outside of your control, you can't control that, but you can control how you react to it.
So these are all the things that you do in order to connect with your players and to make them competitive on the court. But when did you first discover that you had this passion for coaching, and when did you first take an interest in it?
Coaching-wise, I kind of always knew. I loved growing up. We would have open gyms, and I loved kind of organizing what, you know, team, if I was a captain, who I'd pick. And I wouldn't necessarily pick the best players. I'd pick the ones that fit the best roles. You know, if I was a defensive guy, I'd pick a shooter. I'd make sure there was that hustle guy, somebody that could handle the ball. But so I'd say it started early. And then in college, I was able to coach a fifth and sixth grade team, which is another story. Is I thought, you know, played basketball all my life. I thought, you know, I'm okay. I'm an okay coach. And the head coach, who was just a parent volunteer, who I didn't think, you know, had as much experience, but they also are older than me, so they did. They had to leave at halftime of the game, and we're up like 10 points. So I'm in charge for the second half, and we blow a 10-point lead. And they just put on a full-court press, and I had no clue what to do. It was really humbling. And another one of the areas I just kind of I failed and I learned. So that was my first stint in coaching. And then DeWitt, I student taught at DeWitt and was a varsity assistant there. And from there, I learned a lot. Ron Marlin was a good mentor of mine there. And then I was fortunate enough to land a teaching job and a coaching job in Caseville. And also my high school coach, Bob Duffy, and my JV coach, Brad Scott, really, you know, helped me out. And I still connected with those guys. They kind of instilled in me a lot of characteristics that I try to instill in my guys.
We've been talking about wrestling, and CM Punk just recently returned to the WWE. And he said something just recently about that really stuck with me. Someone asked him if he was nervous about doing this, because he's been out of the WWE for a number of years and he left in a huge cloud of controversy, but now he's coming back to do this. And someone said, are you nervous at all about going out from under the curtain again and being back in the stage? And he said, look, if you're passionate about something, it's natural to be nervous about it. And you have been a guy that has always been passionate about basketball. So that first game that you coached, going all the way back to when you were coaching just fifth and sixth graders, what were your nerves like when you first took the sidelines, knowing that you're finally getting a chance to do this and to see what you're made of?
Yeah, I was a nervous wreck. And then when they threw on that press, like, I kind of was a deer in headlights. And I had a friend with me who was also helping us kind of look at him on what do we do. Like, you go from being the player to the coach, and it's a huge difference, you know, a huge difference a couple seats over on the bench, because I know what to do, but I don't know how to verbalize it to these guys out there. I'm trying to tell them, hey, just, you know, do this, do that, but they're not understanding. And, you know, like I said, it was humbling, but yeah, super nervous. And I still remember him calling me after the game, the head coach, you know, so how'd the second half go? You guys put him away? And I was like, no, coach, we lost. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened.
Oh my gosh. What did he say next?
He was really supportive. I'll never forget just how, you know, it's different when you move over a couple seats and you're in charge, and, you know, they throw on something that you're not prepared for, and just try to learn from it.
Eventually, you work your way to coaching junior varsity basketball at Caseville, and that season was, well, let's just say it was memorable for you. You went 0-18 that season, and you had a stretch where you lost 6 games in 1 week. You claim you're the only coach that's ever done that. Now, that could be pretty rough. When you're going through all that, are you starting to have some doubts in your mind as to whether or not you can do this? Or did you just think to yourself, this is all part of the learning process?
I definitely looked at, I had doubts at times, but for the most part, I had great people surrounding me, some good friends at the school. My friend Cale Polkley also coached with me. He was very positive and helped me out. And yeah, Those stories are both great. I think I'm the only coach ever in Michigan to go 0-6 in 1 week. And it was because I was coaching varsity at the time, but our JV coach had a daughter. And there's some complications during the birth, nothing crazy, but he had to be out for the week to be with his family. So I coached the JV and the varsity that week, and we had like a game that was rescheduled because we got snowed out. So we had three games that week. So six games between JV and varsity, and we lost them all. But yeah, definitely learned from it. And the thing is that, you know, I never felt like the guys ever gave up. You know, full credit to them. They just worked hard, and just to see the small steps they made, that kind of helped me through those. And, you know, I still talk to those guys to this day. Was messaging one the other day, but yeah, it was tough. And, you know, those kids worked hard, but they really bought into what I was trying to preach. And I just appreciated them because they were the ones that gave me belief. They allowed me to believe in my coaching just by keep fighting every day. And I really appreciate what they did for me as coach, because if they wouldn't have bought into that, I might not be sitting there today coaching. So
yeah, they definitely stuck with you, and so did the community as well. And you see it all the time. Anytime a coach has that kind of cloud hanging over his head of an 0-18 or even just a losing season, they start calling for his job. But that wasn't the case here. They stuck by you. How much did that support mean to you?
It meant a lot. And the guys, because like you said, I did. We went 0-18 when I coached my first year JV, and I was promoted, which is another huge shocker. But it did show a lot of support. And the guys that I had, they didn't look at it as, oh, they went 0-18 on JV, we're not going to be any good. They bought into it, and you know, I can't thank them enough for their belief in what I was doing and what we were doing. And, you know, we got better, and we won more, and it was good.
After you go 0-18, you actually got promoted to varsity head coach. That probably never happens. How relieved were you to get that phone call?
You know, it was definitely kind of something I wanted to do at some point in my life, to be a varsity head coach. I didn't realize it would happen that quick, or after a season where you go win this. But I took it as I must be doing something right. So yeah, that's kind of how I looked at it. And I was definitely pumped about it. And, you know, I got to work with some tremendous kids, and they were just hardworking kids that I really appreciate.
You managed to turn going 0-18 into taking a major step in your coaching career. And it's like my mother used to always say, well, you can look back and laugh at it now.
Like your mom said, just laugh about it. And, you know, those stories, you don't really remember the wins and losses, but you remember the kids, and you remember those times in the gym with them. And that's what you cherish when you're gone. You'll remember some wins and losses, but I really just remember the times in the gym with those guys.
You have had a number of people that have helped you out and have helped guide you along the way on this journey. Who are some of those people, and what are some of the things that they've taught you?
Yeah, I did mention a couple, like my JV and varsity coach, and even my good friend Kel Oakley, who coaches and teaches now in Bad Act. And then I feel like it's almost continuing to build, and I've just been really fortunate enough to have great mentors. You know, a couple being Tony Burton and Cindy Burton here. And then I developed a relationship with Steve Kramer, who played at USA, played at Hope College, and now he's a basketball skill trainer, and he's honestly one of the best around. So we'll text weekly, and he asked me how it's going, and he's just a great mentor. Just got to know a guy named Ken George out in Grand Rapids, who is Grand Rapids Central's, Forest Hill Central's coach for like 24 years. Phenomenal guy. Talked to him last week, and, you know, he's already got me thinking about a new press breaker, and he's just very supportive. So I've been really lucky to have great mentors and great people and great support.
When you're at Caseville and the call comes to come to Brown City, how much did you know about Brown City at that point?
Well, I didn't know a ton. My friend actually was at Brown City at the time, and he was their coach, and he was leaving. So I knew a little, and then I hopped online, and I found out that they had a great winning tradition for basketball and other athletics And, you know, I talked to the principal and the superintendent, and they both played for Hall of Fame coach Tony Burton, who's the AD. And it was just a very supportive administration.
What were those discussions with Tony Burton like when he asked you to come on board?
He's just a very supportive guy. In anything you do, he just has years and years and years of wisdom. And every time I talk to him, you know, I learn something new. And he's so humble. It's amazing. You know, the guy's won 400 games. He's won, you know, one of the better coaches in the thumb for basketball, and he's still as humble as anybody. He'll tell you it wasn't him. It was his assistants. It was his players. It was timing. And, you know, that's one thing that every time I talk to him, I'm amazed.
When you get to Brown City and you get to see the town, you get to see the school and the culture, what was it about it that ultimately drew you in?
It's definitely a little bigger of a school compared to Caseville, so a little more opportunity to work with some athletes. And just the support of the community and the support of the administration was phenomenal. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a place that has better support.
Once you get to Brown City, you have a lot of success there, and you've carried on the traditions. But there's been a moment that has really stuck out with you in the last five seasons, and that was a game you guys played against Memphis. Now, this game was played to end the 2017 regular season, and on that night, you guys lost to the Yellow Jackets. And for Memphis, it's the first time that they've won a conference game in the Greater Thumb East in 3 years. Now, obviously, you guys didn't want to be the team that handed them their first conference win in quite a while. And on top of that, the week before, you had a loss against Marlette. Now, Marlette was a powerhouse that year, but even though you lost that game, you had to be thinking, okay, next week we'll rebound against Memphis. But then you lose to the Yellow Jackets on top of that, and now you're going into districts on a two-game losing streak. When you're walking off the court at that moment, what's going through your mind knowing that you got to put these two losses behind you and refocus your team and get them ready for districts?
Yeah, that was definitely something that I won't forget coming off that floor, and just really frustrated but also shocked. I mean, we were outcoached, outplayed, we deserved to lose. But, you know, I think we had beat them earlier that year by 15 or 20, and they just outplayed us and they outworked us. And I just remember walking in the locker room, and then it was dead silent, and I just remember being thankful. And the reason I was thankful is we got that one out of our system, because I told the guys, if we play like that again, it's done, because district started. And that's about all I said. And I think it really sunk in to me as a coach and them as a player, is we have to play up to our, you know, ability every single night, because from now on, once district starts, there's no tomorrow. And so it was definitely a wake-up call for us.
And that team definitely bought into what you said, because you win three straight, you win the district championship. What was the mindset of the team at that point?
You know, we were playing some of our best basketball of the year. Everyone, you know, was contributing. Everyone had a role, and I thought we were just really clicking and maturing. And like I said, I think that loss to Memphis helped us out a lot. It woke us up, and we were fortunate enough to win the district. It was at home. That helped too. And then we went into regionals, and we faced Millington, who knocked off Marlette that year, which you mentioned, they were a powerhouse. We lost to them twice, and I think they only had two regular season losses that year, maybe a couple more, but not many more. And so we ended up playing Millington, who was also a great team, and we just, you know, played a really, really good game, and were fortunate enough to win that. And, yeah, that game's something I'll never forget. You know, heading into the locker room after beating Millington, and I just looked at my assistant and I just said, let's just go have fun with these guys. And we just kind of went in the locker room, kind of like you see on Twitter or whatever. And we had some water and just threw it in the air and just had like a mosh pit. And it was a great memory, and I'll cherish it.
Where does that rank amongst all the memories that you've had in basketball?
Oh, it's gotta be up near the top. And the funny part is, like, it's a tale of two locker rooms. You go from literally a week and a half earlier, rock bottom. You've lost to a team that hasn't won a league game in 3 years. You just got outplayed. You got outcoached. And then the next thing, you're in the regional final. Like, so I think it made it even that more special going from that low to, I guess, that high. So it was a great feeling.
And you know who was there for the first half of that game?
Me. Were you there, sir?
Yeah, I was. I was there.
Oh.
I was there for that.
Inside.
I wish I could have been there to see the locker room. Yeah, I was just there on the sidelines getting highlights because it was a couple of stops that I had to make that night, but I was there for that. So you're right. I am kind of like a rabbit's foot for Brown City.
Oh, man. How much do they pay you there? I might have to offer you a contract here in Brown City or something.
Well, I always say I could be the mayor of Harbor Beach because every time I go there, I'm treated like royalty. So I feel like I've been that for your Brown City as well.
Yeah, I think you need to come to Brown City. We'll definitely make you the mayor and treat you well here too, because you seem to just bring great luck every time you're around us.
I've done it for a number of teams that I've had on this podcast, which is why when the basketball season starts, we are planning to do some recordings at the schools on basketball night for the podcast. So I'm thinking we could probably pencil in Brown City somehow.
Pencil in as much as you want. Yeah, you're always welcome here. We'd love to have you.
I appreciate you saying that. And as far as your season goes, it starts on December 9th at Almont. Now, that is always a tough place to play. But what are you hoping to see from the Green Devils that night?
I'm just hoping we come out and compete hard. And, you know, we transfer what we're practicing up until that point into the game. And we just compete. And then the last thing is we play as a team. You know, we always stick together regardless of how the games go and the ebbs and flows of the game. We just maintain a level head and we stick together and play hard. So, you know, they're going to be a tough team. They're athletic. They're still in the state playoffs for football. So I don't know how many guys play basketball, but that just shows you, you know, that they're talent. They have talented athletes.
I want to book in this conversation by bringing up something else in addition to reading that people might be interested to learn about you. Now, your wife had a hand in this one. You are a fan of the chick flicks. And since your wife was involved, I am curious about one thing. It is the Christmas season. So do you and your wife ever sit down and watch all those Hallmark and Lifetime and Up Channel Christmas movies that they've got going on right now?
Not so much. Yeah. When I was preparing for the podcast, I was talking to my wife about that question. And, you know, we came up with a couple, but yeah, I don't, you know, in my mind, I don't mind a chick flick here and there, but the Hallmark is not up my alley. I would say more like a Sweet Home Alabama, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days type of guy. You know, I'm not going to turn it if it's on TV, you know.
You're a Reese Witherspoon, Matthew McConaughey guy, then I take it.
Yeah, something along those lines, for sure.
You are a lucky man because my wife watches those Hallmark Lifetime Up Channel Christmas movies religiously. She's got an app on her phone. I'm not making this up. So you can actually go into this app for Hallmark and checkmark each movie that they've made for Christmas. And when you see it, check it off your list. And there's literally hundreds of them. So there's no escaping that this time of year.
Wow. I know. I saw that they were already showing them 3 weeks ago.
They start at Halloween.
I haven't watched any of them. When they start?
They start at Halloween.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, they don't even waste time with Thanksgiving. They start at Halloween, and they go all the way to December 25th. This has become a tradition for my wife and I to watch the Hallmark movies, but if you've seen one of those Hallmark Christmas movies, you've seen them all.
Exactly. Do you have one that you'd recommend that's not too bad?
There was one in particular called The Christmas Train. Now, this film had an all-star cast, including Danny Glover, and it's about all these people that are traveling on a train during the holidays, and the train gets stuck in a snowstorm and stalls out on the tracks, and so everybody's left to wonder, okay, what do we do next? Where do we go from here? And you have all these people that have kind of drifted apart from one another that start to reconnect in time for Christmas. It's a really great film. It stands out amongst all the others, which, like I've said, if you've seen one Hallmark movie, you've seen all of them because they're all the same. They all follow the same Hallmark Christmas movie pattern. And so my wife and I found out that there was a Hallmark drinking game, and it included a list of all the cliches that happen in a Hallmark Christmas movie. And just one film, you can get into a lot of trouble. In fact, I remember last year when we did it, I went through a couple of beers because we were pretty much checking them all off the list that night.
That sounds awesome. Danny Glover, Hallmark movie? I might have to check that out. I'll have to look it up.
As far as you and the fandom of the chick flicks, you mentioned How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days and Sweet Home Alabama. Are there any others that are on your list right now?
My wife wants to see the new Christmas one. I don't even know what it is. But
I think I know which one you're talking about, Last Christmas.
Yes, yes. I'll probably end up going. I'll probably enjoy it more than I should, or more than I'll admit. So, yeah.
It was really good. My wife and I actually went and saw that the weekend before last. And it stars Emilia Clarke, who is famous for Game of Thrones. So I was anxious to see her in her first role outside of riding a dragon and breathing fire on cities. So that was a big change of pace for her. But it's a really good movie. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but there are some surprises in that film.
Oh, yeah, we don't get to go out too much, but that's one we have circled on the calendar. Hopefully get to go check that movie out.
But like we've talked about, the big date that's circled on the calendar, December 9th, Brown City at Almont. Coach Troshak, Coach T from the BC, I appreciate you taking the time this week to talk to us on A Duff Said. This was an awesome conversation, and I think we just might have to do a podcast in Brown City this season.
Definitely. I'm honored to be on the podcast. By far the best name for a podcast I've heard of. I really enjoy it, and thanks for having me.
Coach T from the BC, you got it. Thank you so much for being on this week's show. And that's going to wrap up my 20th episode of A Duff Said. Now, if this was your first time listening to A Duff Said, if you want to get caught up on previous episodes, all you got to do is go to dufftyler.podbean.com. Or you can download the Podbean app. There is no charge to do so. And then you can become a subscriber to A Duff Said and get instant alerts every time a new show is available. That's going to wrap up this week's show. We'll be back in 2 weeks because of the holiday. So until next time, this is Duff Tyler reminding you to A, have a happy Thanksgiving, and B, if Duff said it, it must be true, because that's what a Duff said.